The U.S. military has until the end of the year, just a few more days actually, to come up with a plan for how they'll open up all combat roles to women. Earlier this month, Defense Secretary Ashton Carter announced that combat positions, including in the military's elite fighting forces, would be open to qualified women by April of next year.
They'll be able to serve as Army Rangers and Green Berets, Navy SEALs, Marine Corps Infantry, Air Force Parajumpers, and everything else that was previously open only to men.
Lieutenant General David Barno was senior American commander of the U.S. and coalition forces in Afghanistan from 2003 until 2005. Today, he's a distinguished practitioner in residence at American University School of International Service. Before he retired, Lieutenant General Barno commanded a brigade that included hundreds of women. I visited the general in his Washington, D.C. office recently, and he says that as long as the services maintain their high standards for combat roles, the armed forces will only improve by including women.
They're looking at the psychological screening. They're looking at what they can do physically. They're looking at their mental abilities, blending these all together, maintaining a very tough standard. If they can get in and do that and become part of the team, you're not going to have any issues with cohesion. And those teams form around the people that are there. I commanded a brigade of about 2,000 soldiers. It was 20% women. And I watched units that had just integrated women in form the same kind of high-powered teams that I saw in units that were all male. So it's all about building around those teams of individuals coming together to accomplish a task.
What have we learned from other recent cases of integration? The repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell comes immediately to mind. What have we learned through that process or other similar processes that are going to inform how to proceed here?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I can recall a lot of the pushback before the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and I got involved in some heated email debates about that with some people that are pretty knowledgeable, and there were strong arguments that this was going to disrupt these units. We've seen 0.00 of that across the force in the last 2 years. So I think that's instructive here. Bringing women in is not the same. But again, if we maintain the standard, if we build teams that are working together from the beginning to get the mission accomplished, I'm confident that these are going to be better units at the end of the day.
I want to read, you've probably read this, the RAND Corporation did a study of about 7,000 special operators. Some 85% of the respondents said they oppose opening the special operations jobs to women, and some 70% oppose having women in their individual units. More than 80% said women aren't strong enough. What does it mean to this effort if a vast majority of the men who are already doing these highly secret, highly demanding, very respected jobs in the special operations units just don't want it?
Well, I'd say two things about that. Number one, I think if I went back and I surveyed the fighter pilot community 20 years ago before we integrated women into fighter squadrons in the Navy and the Air Force, I would have gotten the exact same polling numbers. Women weren't tough enough. This was a man's job. This is physically demanding that they're not going to be able to meet the standards. We found none of that to be the case. The second observation would be that virtually everybody you're talking to in this study serves in male-only units. They have no experience of serving in a unit that was an integrated between men and women that were performing tough battlefield tasks out there. There are a lot of those units out there today. They're engineer units. So I think they're going to find they're going to be a better unit. They're going to be more effective, and they're going to have a broader insight into some of the really complex gray zone challenges in warfare that these units themselves are facing today and are struggling with right now.
I spent a lot of time covering the Hill, so I've covered a lot of the debates with Senator Gillibrand and others, Senator McCaskill, over sexual assault in the military. You've written in the press that a move like this should actually help with a rampant culture of sexual abuse and sexual assault in the military. A lot of people intuitively have the opposite view, that if you throw people together, it's an environment that might lead to those types of assaults. You say the opposite.
I don't think you can have it both ways. We have, quote unquote, thrown those people together now across 80% of all the jobs in the military, and we've done that for 20 plus years. I don't think the results of that have said that this has now worsened the problem somehow or another. If we have a military that was only men or only women, we'd still have this problem in same-sex challenges. I'm confident, again, from my own experience out there, watching units integrate and leading a force as a colonel that was 20% women, that units that have got women in there that are made part of the team have fewer problems than those that have got women on the outside looking in. So I actually think from a cultural standpoint, this will be beneficial to the military as a whole. If every unit has women, if every unit understands women are part of the team, women aren't some outside entity out there they have no contact, no dealings with, this is going to build stronger teams, and I think that'll help protect against some of these egregious problems.
So what's going on with the Marines? Let's talk about the Marines for 1 second, because they were, and maybe this doesn't surprise people, the Marines were the branch that reacted to this immediately and sort of said to the Secretary of Defense, there are certain jobs where we just don't want this. Now, of course, they were overruled because the Secretary of Defense and the President had been clear. But what's going on at the Marines? What are those jobs that they don't want to include women in? And what does it say about Marine culture? And will they be able to accommodate this decision?
Well, they'll certainly be able to accommodate it. The Marines are incredibly effective. They've got amazingly capable leaders, and they will charge this hill just like they charge every other successfully. I'm not sure how to actually handicap their thinking on how they looked at this. I find it interesting that the Army has machine gunners, the Army has recon specialists, and the Army has fire sports specialists, and the Navy and the SEAL community has people that do those things and more, yet neither the SEAL community, the Army Special Ops Ranger or Special Forces community, or the Army Infantry community, you know, elected to, you know, decide to ask for an exception to the policy to have women ruled out. So, I mean, part of it's the culture. The other services have a lot more women in them, so their culture's a bit different. But at the end of the day, the Secretary made his decision, and I'm confident the Marines are going to move out on this and take the objective like they do every other one they're given.
Caveats are important. You don't implement a decision like this without good data. What are some of the things to watch out for? I mean, to a lot of people, it's a no-brainer, sure, but when you're planning a unit of warfighters, you don't move too quickly. You don't do anything that undermines a combat capability. So if you were the one, you know, sitting at the drafting table, I guess, mapping out how this goes, what do you watch out for?
I think two things. Number one is you want to make sure those standards stay in place, and you want to make sure that they're administered objectively without regard to whether men or women are going through the evaluation. So the Army, I think, did a superb job in how they approached this with Ranger School. I got down there to watch that, and I'm very critical on the Army of a lot of things. I think they did this very, very well. I was impressed with what I saw down there. So secondly, I think the services have to be very thoughtful about how they bring women into these units. Finding one or two women who are qualified and putting them in a battalion of 800 Marine infantrymen is not a great idea. And the services have learned this as they've integrated ships in the Navy and submarines in the Navy. So what they want to do is they need to collect a number of qualified women who've gotten through the training and then bring them in together with officers, non-commissioned officers, and junior soldiers in a tranche so that there's a critical mass that arrives at the unit at the same time.
Lieutenant General David Barno, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's Lieutenant General David Barno, Senior American Commander of U.S. and Coalition Forces in Afghanistan from 2003 until 2005, now a distinguished practitioner in residence at American University School of International Service.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.